right. Do we feel ready?
I suppose so. We should get this shindig started. Hello, everybody, and welcome. Thanks for tuning in.
Welcome to the show.
Yeah, this is Peculiar Pairings. How you doing?
Welcome. I am Celine.
I am Matt. And this is our little show where we talk about stuff and we have little treats and drinks. And it's a good time, and we hope that you enjoy it and have fun.
Yeah, that is the hope anyway.
I gotta work on my intros. That felt loose, like too loose. That felt a little rough.
A little too fast and loose for
yeah,
you.
Yeah. I was like, I thought I knew where I was going, and then I kind of got there, but it was much more sloppy than I had anticipated. We're here. What are you gonna do?
We don't strive for perfection. We strive for progress.
That's a good. That should be a fucking t-shirt. That's what we don't strive for perfection. And just moving ever forward. That's all we're going for.
Just moving. We strive for just moving forward.
Yeah, somebody falls off the fucking wagon, hurts their ankle, they're gone. We're keeping moving. That's how it works.
We will leave you behind.
Yeah.
We are okay with that.
Yeah, we were just talking about how it's like, you live in a big city or something, shit's moving fast. You gotta just go. You can't wait for other people. There's no room for etiquette or politeness. You gotta just keep moving.
Yeah, you really do. You can't deal with the bullshit.
No. Well, Celine, what are we talking about this week?
We are talking about Russian zombies.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I'm gonna say, I think this is probably going to be the funkiest history episode we have ever had.
Oh, okay. Because when you first told me about this, I was like, I have to be wrong. But of course, I'm thinking of like zombies as we think in like the modern entertainment sense. I'm like, I know that even the origin of zombies is like a voodoo kind of term, I think.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, I have absolutely no idea what Russian zombies means, what it pertains to. I'm sure I'm wrong. But of course, when I was thinking about the treats, I was like, it's gotta be something like a zombie as we think of it this day and age. So our drink this week is a White Russian because it has Russian in the name. Just pretty much the whole origin there.
I have figured that's where that was at least going.
Well, and then I thought of like the White Russian because there are other Russian drinks, but I was like, if you're a zombie, your skin is pale and, you know, you just look sort of downtrodden and whatnot. And I'm like, the White Russian is kind of a pale, murky drink. And so it kind of mimics what a sort of shambling zombie looks like in a sort of sense, which is not necessarily an appetizing way to look at a drink, but damn, is it tasty.
Yeah, I do love a good White Russian.
Yeah,
and I feel like if you wanted to spice it up a little bit, you can maybe add a little grenadine in there.
I almost did that. I have a bunch of grenadine. Yeah, I have some grenadine and some maraschino cherries, but I didn't do that this time. But it's definitely a good twist. And then it kind of creates a sort of like murky blood color to it as well. So also in the zombies. But speaking of blood color, I did actually look up a bunch of different treats like from Russia and that kind of stuff. And I couldn't find anything along the lines that like was easily purchasable in the US.
Oh.
And some of them were fairly simple, but I'm like, you're getting ready for a wedding. I'm trying to work a lot to pay off debt. I'm like, we just don't really have that much time. And like 90% of the treats that I read on were like basically just sort of cupcakes. And I wanted it to be still sort of zombie themed. So I was like, red velvet.
Yeah.
That's what will. It's very, very loosely Russian inspired, but also has the color of blood. So, you know, like zombies eating flesh. So it.
Yeah.
So grab your White Russians, grab yourself a red velvet cupcake and let's dive in like a horde of zombies.
Yes.
I am very excited to see just how wrong my assumption is.
All right. So my sources, this is always the fun part. I have Wikipedia, ScienceABC.com, and WarHistoryOnline.com.
The amount you keep saying history kind of blows my mind, because I'm still thinking, like, fiction realm. I'm like, this can't be a real thing.
Yeah, so for any of our listeners who follow the pattern of how we do most of our stories, it's usually history, conspiracy theory, some sort of cryptid type thing, true crime, spooky, and then history. And then it repeats again. Starts back at conspiracy theory. So, with last week being something spooky and haunted, we jump into history.
Okay.
And we are going all the way back to World War I.
Ooh.
Which?
I'm taking the time machine.
Back to As I was at least taught in school, I don't know about everyone else.
You learned
something
about
that was always brought up was that World War I was unlike anything people had ever experienced before in wartime.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Ever. Since at this point in history, all of our weapons had become more effective. Regular war itself was way more gruesome. And we start to see the use of chemical warfare, which, as we know today, certain things are outlawed and considered war crimes. Yeah. Same with, like, nuclear war. That's a war crime.
I think I'm going to reveal just how unlearned I am in the ways of historical knowledge. But is World War I what essentially brought us to the Geneva Convention, like, agreement? Like, the idea of, like, what war crimes would be going forward, especially in terms of, like, chemical warfare?
I believe so, and I personally do not know enough about the Geneva Convention to know when in the timeline. I do know that with the introduction of chemical warfare from World War I, it was first introduced in the battlefield at the onset of the Second Battle of Ypres on April 22nd, 1915. And it was basically to control strategic area. And, you know, the Germans were very determined to win.
Oh, yeah.
So this is like when we first see it come about. But before any of this was actually brought into battle, they did have multiple conventions and meetings where they're like, hey, we're starting to see, like, this evolution. And through that, they had in 1899 and in 1907. So in 1899, they had the Hague Declaration concerning asphyxiating gases. And then in 1907, the Hague Convention on Land Warfare, in which they all sat down and agreed, hey, using chemical warfare is a war crime.
Which I think before
the start of World War I.
Okay, okay. Yeah, and I think that's a fair agreement where it's like, look, we all know that war happens. None of us are particularly happy about it, but, you know, sometimes that's what it comes down to.
Technology is advancing. We're learning more stuff in science.
Yeah.
Maybe we shouldn't use chemical gases.
Yeah, it's like it didn't take as long to realize that, like, you shoot someone in the head and they're dead. I mean, like, maybe they'll survive, but, like, generally they're dead, they're out of commission, they're not coming back, and they're not going to have any, like, long-term issues. It's like you use chemical warfare. I would like to think that it was initially with the attempt of, like, less lethal means, like, hopefully that was the plan. But it's like, oh my God, the long-term effects of so much of this shit is, like, worse than death. So it's like, no, maybe let's just go back to guns and bombs and shit.
So basically, everyone agreed in 1899 and 1907, hey,
oh wow,
this is a war crime and we should not be doing this. And then World War I comes along and everyone does it anyway. Because fuck the rules.
Right, because humans.
So what was happening was, like, in early 1915, the German troops started using canisters containing a mixture of chlorine and bromine. When the two come together, makes hydrochloric acid or some sort of variation of something horribly acidic and awful. So they would throw these canisters out onto the battlefield. The gas would float just in every direction.
Oh my God.
And generally speaking, unless you had the technology to, you know, fumigate with like a gas mask or to filter the air, anyone is fair game. So you're just hoping your equipment is better than the other side's.
Right. You're hoping the wind is in your favor so it doesn't come back at your own troops.
Yeah. So, and what a lot of other troops would do is they would tie linen to their face.
Okay.
To make like a makeshift respirator to like filter it through.
Yeah.
Which was not the most effective, but it was better than absolutely nothing.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good to know. I figured for sure that was just like something that the higher ups would tell the troops to make them feel like they're protected. So it's like, well, I mean, it's basically nothing, but it is better than nothing.
Yeah.
So that's good.
So at this point, all sides just continued to use the gas until I think the Germans were using it first, and then the British started using it in September of 1915.
Okay, so it didn't take long to follow suit.
No, but what the British then started using is what is now more commonly known as mustard gas.
Oh.
So they went with a different route, which is still shitty. Yeah. And with that, they first used that in July of 1917. And although it was not as fatal as the chlorine-bromine mixture, it was heavier than the air around it, so it would kind of float at the bottom of the ground.
Oh, interesting.
And it would just affect any sort of injuries. If you had an open wound, you're fucked.
Ooh, okay, ow.
And it would seep into the soil, so the soil would be affected for weeks.
Oh, wow.
So you couldn't, like, dig crops in that area ever for, like, honestly, probably you'd want to wait like a solid year just to be safe. That's my personal opinion. I don't know how true that is, but if it's sitting in there for weeks, maybe not safe for food growth and consumption.
No, yeah. Like, there's no way to really just rinse it out of the soil. Like, it's the earth. You can't just get rid of it. It's like it's fucking in there. Yeah, you don't want your corn coming up or, like, your pumpkins just full of mustard gas.
Yeah. So basically everyone at this time is like, yeah, we're gonna do it anyway.
We're gonna do it. I also didn't realize that there was an agreement well before that, because I did remember that
that's
one of the things that World War One was famous for, was like the chemical warfare. But yeah, I didn't realize we had already come together and been like, hey, we probably shouldn't use like crazy weird chemicals on each other, right? And it's like, no, yeah, of course not. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. And then,
cool.
Hey, yeah.
I had my fingers crossed, so did you.
Oh, motherfucker, you son of a bitch. Yeah, we're going to do it anyway. Should we do it anyway? Yeah, we're going to do it anyway. All right, go fuck yourself. Mustard gas.
Now that we're both on the same sides, we're both doing it anyway. It's fine.
Yeah,
it's fine.
I also didn't realize that hydrochloric acid would like vaporize so that like you're breathing it in and oh god, that does not make me comfortable at all.
Yeah, and I will say I have used hydrochloric acid.
I have too.
We use it for my metalsmithing class for like etching.
Oh wow.
So what you can do is like on metal or like if you're doing like pendants and stuff, you can draw on it in Sharpie the parts you want to keep like flat, and then you leave these open areas so that the acid like eats away at it and kind of etches it down, which is really cool.
Yeah.
But you have to be very careful with it. We were not allowed to handle it. Like the TA had to like put everything in the bin, had to help assist with any sort of like removal of like switching out if you had one that was just like, hey, it's got kind of like a weird mix of metal and acid and it's not as strong anymore, so now we need a new batch. You have them help you, like, assist in switching it out just because they're like, it's too risky to trust you all to do this on your own. And this was in college, so.
Right, when you're like, more or less expected to be adults and, like, not just do stupid shit.
Yeah, they're like, we don't trust that someone's not going to do stupid shit. And it was one of those things where, like, yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah, you're all adult enough to handle it. Yeah, you're all adult enough to recognize, yeah, don't let us touch that. You handle that. We're just learning. We're just learning. You do the dangerous shit and we'll play with it.
Yeah. It looked really cool in the end, but yeah, you had to like thoroughly wash everything. You had to use certain stuff. It was a whole process. So I'm like, just knowing how dangerous it is in a liquid form, I don't want to know how dangerous it is in a gas form.
Oh my God. Yeah, and you're breathing it in. I'm based on your description there, I think I'm thinking of maybe sulfuric acid.
Oh, maybe.
All I know is we had, this is gross, but we had like a clog that we just couldn't get out either in the bathroom sink or the toilet. And we were like, well, we can't really call a fucking plumber, but we couldn't take care of it. And so we went to the hardware store and we're like, what is your most like caustic drain cleaner that we can get? And the dude's like, well, here on the back shelf, you'll notice these plastic bottles that are then themselves wrapped in a special plastic with a sticker on it that says must use eye protection and gloves. that'll take care of anything you can fucking fit
that'll
in the sink.
That'll take care of it.
Yeah. And they're like, but seriously, get gloves, get some eye protection, and read the instructions carefully. We're like, okay. Which, luckily, we were smart enough to do that. We did. But, like, literally, you pour it down the sink, and it starts to smoke. And we're like, are we about to burn the house down?
You're like, are we gonna die?
Yeah. We're like, probably shouldn't be breathing this in. And luckily, the bathroom we needed to use it on had a window. And so we, like, opened a bunch of windows on the upper floor just to, like, let it
vent it out.
Yeah, and I think we just let it sit there like almost overnight or something. And sure as hell worked. It cleaned everything out, smelled weird, but unclogged for sure.
It works. In the end, it worked.
Yeah, it was gnarly, but yeah, that's acid for you.
Yeah. So this whole affair brings us to the Battle of Osovik in August of 1915. And I am going to tell you right now, I had never heard of this.
Okay.
So this is, our history on World War I was never very thorough.
Yeah.
It was like, it was bloody and horrific. And we used chemical weapons and then we're like, maybe we shouldn't do that. And the end.
That is a weird thing, like, growing up, like, when you start to delve into things that you had a little bit of knowledge on, you start to realize just how much they left out, and you're like, holy shit. And it's like, it makes you look at America, especially, in a different light, depending on the historical events that you're researching. You're like, oh, we're not always necessarily the good guys like they told us we were.
Oh, yeah. It gets dark. It really does. So this battle was between the Russians and the Germans.
Oh, right. Forgot that we were talking about
Russians. For anyone who does not know that Russia and Germany were on opposing sides versus in World War II where they were on the same side until Hitler stabbed him in the back and then they switched sides.
And they were pissed.
Yes, they were pissed. So our two opposing sides, the fortress of Osovik is located in what is now northeastern Poland near the town of Białystok. And it was built by the Russian Empire in the previous century. So it's older structure. It's been there for a while. It's in kind of this like marshland area. And the reason the Germans really wanted it was that if they took over this fortress, they then could have access to all these other areas. So this fortress was kind of like the gateway to getting like into Russia and like taking over more space, basically. Yeah,
it's like this main foothold that they need. And it's like, if as long as we can, I almost went into like a Russian accent. I'm like, nope, wrong people. And they're like, if we could just get to this tower, we will have all the power.
Yeah.
Fuck you guys have grown. It's a great joke.
And it's wordplay. They had multiple attempts to take this fortress at this point. Mm-hmm. And so far were unsuccessful. Although they were very surprised with how well the fortress was able to withstand all of these attacks. It had survived heavy artillery fire from the Germans to the point that the Russians were like, oh, I definitely thought it was going to be done this last time, but I guess not.
Even the Russians are surprised that it held. They're like, holy shit. We thought we were going down, but nope, wrong accent again. Yeah, they thought that they were just going to be destroyed, and they were like, holy shit, this is a hell of a fucking tower. In Poland, of all places.
Yeah. And in order to get to the tower itself, the Germans had to cross two sets of trenches before facing the surrounding walls, in which they had multiple battlements, and like they could be picked off by like shooters. I don't know if they had anyone doing archery from the top, but like basically just getting through the two sets of trenches was hard enough, and then you get to the wall and you still have to go through another barrier.
Yeah, that seems like their version of D-Day, like when the Allied forces were storming Normandy, and it's like,
yeah,
like really, like is this, you're just kind of like thinking about the commanders who made the decision to do this, and you're like, is this really the best way to do this? Because I don't think a lot of us are going to make it. Like, is there maybe a better way we can take care of this? Because fuck this, man.
Yeah. So, but once they got through the first layers of defense, basically they didn't have as many people on the inside actually defending the fort. Because just to get to that point, it took so much. So they're like, yeah, well, like, once you get inside, it's basically...
it's a skeleton crew, The Russians are like, they will never get this far. You see those trenches? This wall is too big. The Germans are not determined. And then they're like,
basically, the man in charge over in Germany is Kaiser Wilhelm the Second.
Yeah. I am number two. I'm spy,
And he basically just needed to get Russia out of his way. And in his eyes, the way to do this was to destroy this fortress to a pile of rubble.
Oh.
He was going to break down the Russians.
Wait a minute. After sending all those men through the trenches in the wall, he's like, we're going to send all of you to your deaths so that we can destroy the tower. And it's like, don't we have bombs? Can't we just throw a bunch of bombs at them and just call it a day?
They do not have bombs yet.
Oh, fuck me. Okay, well, I was wrong. Yeah, that's his answer then. Yeah, you got to go through the trenches. That's what we want, this tower. Get in there.
Because since this was World War II, this was before the atomic bomb. So they could make things like Molotov cocktails and like stuff like that, where like they can
low-level bombs
try to blow shit up a little bit, but it's not like a real...
It's not like
a bomb.
I would like to defend myself a little bit. I did know it was before nuclear power, so I was not... For anyone who's yelling at me, I knew it wasn't a nuke, but I was just thinking like, you know, like bigger than a hand grenade, but...
Oh, like a pipe bomb? I'm thinking like...
I was thinking like something we can drop from a plane, but I'm not even sure if we have like any real aircraft in terms of military use in World War
I. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know enough about World War I to know.
The big one's World War II. That's what everybody focuses on. Nobody cares about
World War I. mean, seriously, though. Let's talk about World War II, and you're like, World War I, and they're like, yeah, it happened. It sucked.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, I was going to say, if there's one thing I remember about history class and the two big
wars. It was the Great War, because it was supposed to end all war.
Right.
And then World War II, and you're like, what the fuck?
It's yeah, World War II was so big, they retconned the Great War into World War I. Like, everybody called it the Great War until the 1940s, because they're like, well, that one was pretty great, but this one's insane. So this is World War II, and that was the first one.
Yeah,
it's like everybody just skips World War I.
I'm very much just thinking, like, atomic bombs, so I wasn't even considering anything handheld that they could have thrown for exploding things. So that actually is a fair point.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to defend myself, where it's like, I know I made a whole point about not knowing a lot about history, but I watched Oppenheimer. I knew what time period they were making the bomb in. But I was wondering, like, if they had some kind of other artillery. I guess I believe
they did. They Oh, that's actually my next point.
Oh, wait. Let's just continue then.
So for this specific attack, he brought in what he considered the big guns, which was bringing in Field Marshal Paul von Hindenburg.
Oh, that's again, I don't know a lot about history, but I recognize that name.
Yes, in which they brought in tanks.
Oh, okay.
Infantry, 14 infantry battalions, a sapper battalion, 30 artillery batteries, which I'm not really sure what that meant.
Okay, yeah.
And 24 to 30 heavy siege guns.
Wow. Okay, so
they were going hard.
Well, you wouldn't need that much infantry. Well, that's there again, like, okay, so if his plan is to just destroy the tower, I don't see why you have to have men running through these two lines of defense and getting to the wall. And I'm probably wrong, but from the little that I know from, like, certain documentaries and admittedly video games, a artillery battery is more like just a small, like, cannon, like a cannonball cannon, but modern, like, bullets. And then a full-on siege weapon is usually something that's, like, similar to a tank, like, it's on wheels, but it's a giant gun that, like, kind of angles more into the sky, and it's meant to shoot really big things really, like, from far away distances.
Yeah.
So, like, it seems like he's bringing the right stuff if he wants to destroy the towers. I'm still just confused about, like, the fact that we're about to discuss chemical weapons, and if your aim is to just raise it to the ground, why do you need these guys to go through these lines of defense? Seems like a weird strategy, that's all I'm saying.
It does. And basically, they had 900 Russians against 7,000 Germans. So the Germans went in being like, we're going to fucking kick ass.
Yeah.
We're going to destroy everybody.
Okay. Well, and yeah, so I guess even if his plan is just to destroy it, I mean, he's going hard. He's like, I'm bringing everybody over. Yeah.
And I'm sure there was a plan to move on past this fort and bring everyone with them continue forward. But
right. So he's just bringing everybody for the campaign. That so there happens to be 7,000 infantry. But he's like, yeah, you all just stand there. We're going to bring down the tower and then you can go in and have fun.
Yeah. And Mr. Paul Hindenburg, von Hindenburg, brought with him 30 canisters of chlorine gas. Because they're like, here's what we're going to do. We're going to throw these into the fortress and we're going to flush them out and then we'll kill them all.
Oh.
It'll be great.
Okay.
And they had to wait for the conditions to become favorable. So, like, the wind was blowing the right direction and not, like, back at them.
Mm-hmm.
And the stars aligned for the Germans, or so they thought, on August 6th of 1915. And the Russians, in preparation for them, are like, all right, it's going to be a battle. We've got a good stronghold. Like, the odds seem very low, but
Russian. This tower has never fallen before. We're going to be safe. We're going to be fine. We may they may outnumber us more than 7-1, but fuck it. We're in it. We're the Russian Empire. Well, I don't know if they're an empire, but. We got a tower, damn it. We're going to survive.
Via Russian.
Yeah. Da.
Da.
Look at these. Look at tower. He's impenetrable. Fucking Germans.
And then they could see the gas coming, which people said looked like something out of a horror movie in which the gas is moving forward. And it's like this yellowy cloud.
Oh, mustard.
It's like a yellow-green color.
Yeah.
And underneath it, the grass is turning black.
Shut.
As it moves forward.
Okay, yeah, that would horrify me. Like, as confident as I felt in the construction of this tower, I'd be like, hey, is that grass just dying? Like, you see a grass underneath cloud? It's turning black, no? I feel like that's not good.
And they did this because the Russians didn't have protective equipment against chemical warfare. Okay. They're like, well, we want this tower. This is a stronghold for, like, moving elsewhere. Let's hit them where it hurts. We know they don't have this stuff. So let's use our stuff that they don't have.
Yeah, which does kind of... Well, and I suppose it's possible the Russians didn't know that they had chemical weapons, but it does kind of...
It is possible they didn't know.
Yeah, it does kind of shine a light on their previously acknowledged confidence in the structure, where it's like, hey, they can't get us in here. Hey, is that cloud? Is that the cloud? It looks like cloud of death. Oh, shit. Like, you would have...
Just cloud of death.
Yeah, you look at them with their guns and their troops. They will never get in here. Are they attacking us with smoke? What is this? Oh, shit.
So what they did, because they had to move fast, was they put their undershirts across their faces and soaked them either in water or urine to keep the gas out.
Wow.
That's
pretty brilliant. Like, I don't know if it works, but
it's similar to what firefighters used to do before they had respirators, in which they all had beards, would soak them in water and put them over their faces.
Shut up. They could use their beards as makeshift filters? That's awesome.
I think so.
Let's just
I don't think it worked well, but I think it kind of worked.
It comes back to the idea of, like, it's better than literally nothing. So may as well. You got some water, you got a t-shirt and or beard, go for it.
Yeah. So basically, the gas itself, it's a mixture of chlorine. And when you inhale it, it combines with the moisture in your lungs and creates the hydrochloric acid. So it creates acid in your body.
I don't know why, but that feels worse somehow, where it's like, if you could just prevent the gas from getting in you, like, you'll be fine, but you have to breathe. And it's like the it's just something in the way that you described that, like, it's not even the acid yet. And then you breathe it in and it mixes with part of you
and becomes acid.
The acid. Oh God, that's horrifying.
And it basically eats you from the inside out, which is horrifying.
No, thank you.
So the effects of this gas were near immediate and entirely devastating.
Oh, I bet. Oh, my God.
However, Lieutenant Vladimir Kotlinsky was very determined to hold back the Germans. So him and 60 of the men inside, despite having suffered horrifically at this point, covered themselves up in these bandages or hacking up parts of their lungs and still got up and charged at the Germans as they attempted to enter inside.
Oh, okay. So I thought you were going to say that he came up with some miraculous way to prevent damage from the gas. You're saying they are under the effects of the gas and they're fighting anyway.
Yes.
Jesus. Okay. Well, that's
via Russian.
I was going to say that. And not to mention the morale that the Germans would have to be feeling as they send this death gas into the thing. They've got to be thinking, well, we're just going to waltz in and take this thing.
Yeah. I mean, that is their thought entirely.
And it just got to me why this episode is called The Russian Zombies. You're a German walking into this fucking building, you're expecting just to see bodies. And what's coming at you is what you would perceive as decomposing bodies that are still fighting you.
Yeah. Holy basically, shit. That is, they went in expecting just about everyone to be dead or actively dying.
Right. Yeah, maybe and still alive, but not functional, like not capable of fighting in any way.
Yeah. Instead, are being charged at by men who are physically just slowly decomposing.
Oh my God.
And dying in, like, to the point that they thought that they had actively died, reanimated, and were then fighting them.
Oh my God. The Russian spirit is strong. Also, so, I just kind of, I'm sorry to interrupt again, but it just hit me that you said 60 guys. So there were 900, and presumably some of them are still alive, but like out of the 900,
most of them have died.
Wow.
And only 60 of those who survived, which is probably less than 100, actually attempted to fight. Jeez. And the sight of these bloody, coughing up parts of their body, men running at them, frightened the Germans so much that they retreated. And in doing so, just all chaos broke loose. They were stumbling into like their own barbed wire traps and stuff that they had set up to try to like catch any stragglers and just... Yeah. Absolutely, like, tripping over themselves trying to get away from whatever the fuck this was that they did not know.
Yeah.
But was not okay with it.
Oh, man. That. Well, and then, like, they're running out. Presumably, like the rest of the troops see them, like, running, thinking that they're cowards. And, like, the fuck is wrong with you? And, like, they can't even believe what these guys have been seeing. And so they're like, what? They're tripping over? All they see is their fellow Germans, like, tripping over their own traps and shit. Being like, what the fuck is wrong with these guys?
And in the midst of this chaos and the Germans running away and retreating entirely, the few Russian gun operators who were able to actually do anything open fired on the fleeing Germans, thus resulting in their victory.
That is insane. It's like, look, if we're gonna die, we're taking some of your asses with us. Fuck you, you German bastards.
Yep. And it was during the attack that Lieutenant Kolinsky was mortally wounded and then handed over command of the compound to Osvetska Sap Company Straminsky, or Marshal Straminsky, who then carried out the remaining of the attack, which was like being like, all right, like they're fleeing, shoot them.
Mm-hmm.
And thus succeeded in their victory.
That is insane. They pushed them back.
And shortly after this attack, which they started calling the Attack of the Dead Men.
Yeah, that's badass.
Osovike Fortress ended up falling to the Germans.
I feel like I had just enough hope, like, because what these guys did was so badass that you're like, maybe they make it. It's like, well, they're still dying of mustard gas, and they're still outnumbered, like, 100-1 at this point.
So the fortress fell about a month later, but before that, the Russians decided, well, we don't want you to have this fortress, so they demolished it and put it to a pile of rubble themselves.
Oh, wow.
Knowing that the Germans would be back, so when they captured it, there wasn't really anything left.
Which I also think is hilarious, because Kaiser Wilhelm is like, I wish to raise this building to the ground. I want it to be in flames. And then they get there and they're like, well, sir, we did demolish the building. I mean, it's, you know, the Russians did all the work for us. And he's like, yeah, but I wanted to destroy it.
I wanted to do it.
Like a little boy who somebody else kicked over his blocks. And they're like, Wilhelm, are you okay? And, you know, that was really mean of him to knock over those blocks. And he's like, I was building them up so I could knock some over. And somebody else did. And they're like, wait, you were just going to destroy it? Yes, because I'm German. I wanted to destroy it. That was mine. And then the Russians are like, das vidanya.
Yep. Basically.
But a month? I thought you were going to say a day, maybe a couple days.
No, it was maybe a month, because the attack was in August. And then by September, the Germans then captured the fortress, which was then just like a pile of rubble.
How did they do that with 90 guys?
I think they came in afterwards.
Like more Russians?
Yes.
Oh.
More of them came back after the attack and then dismantled things, because they're like, you know what, if we can't have it, no one can.
Yes, which is kind of a foreshadowing for World War II, when they did their scorched earth thing, like as the Germans progressed into Russia, and they're like, oh yeah, you think you're gonna use our resource? Fuck you. Like, you're gonna find us burned shit. And now you are too deep into Russia.
And the question that ran through everyone's minds as they were trying to figure out how exactly did these dead men have the sheer will to just go on?
Jesus.
Because they're like, they're physically falling apart like a literal zombie. And it was just that because they are super patriotic Russians, that is what you do because you were Russian.
That's so it's just
sheer determination and patriotism that they used to muster up the strength to charge at the Germans. And then died.
That is incredible.
Since I believe most of them did end up dying from this attack.
There was a small part of me that did keep thinking, maybe they make it. It's like, well, they've already been hit by mustard gas. They're still way outnumbered. There's no fucking way they can actually, not to mention, like, demolishing a building. Like, 90 dudes are not going to be able to do
that. No, they brought in reinforcements for that.
Right. But even still, like, I suppose the Germans were expecting, you know, a few hours tops, they'll all be dead. We'll go in and just take the place. So, like, they were thinking, this is going to be a day. You know,
it's going to be a cakewalk for them.
Right.
And it was not.
And then after the proverbial dust settles, they walk up to this building and they're like, oh, all of that work, all of that mustard gas,
that work for nothing.
Yeah, and it's just a pile of rocks. That's kind of badass. Like, fuck you.
And they named the battle the Attack of the Dead Men because they thought they were all dead.
Yeah, literally dead.
And thus it then slipped into obscurity in the American mind, because that's how we handled World War I.
Well, it didn't involve any Americans, so we were just kind of like, who gives a shit?
No, but if I had a teacher be like, oh yeah, there's this whole battle where they thought the Russians were zombies, I'd be like, I'm sorry, what?
Oh yeah, if you turned this into a Hollywood movie and the title was The Battle of the Dead Men, that would sell out like hotcakes.
I believe it has been turned into a movie, actually.
Oh, shit, really? Oh. Was it called The Battle of the Dead Men? Because that would
Checking that right now.
Because I was thinking that of a couple minutes ago, of like, how is this not a movie?
Let's see. Let me pull up the Wikipedia article, because it does.
Oh, on the battle, like, and it'll say, like, is now a major motion picture because of.
Okay, so it actually was not made into a movie. It should have.
Oh.
But a Russian metal band called Aria released a song inspired by the battle, which they titled Attack of the Dead.
Yes.
A Swedish metal band, Sabaton, released a song about the battle, which they called Attack of the Dead Men, in their 2019 album, The Great War.
Oh, I wonder what inspired that album.
Oh, I did misspoke about the movie. World of Warships and War Gaming Company produced a short film based on the events of the battle. So not a major production, but
a short film. Well, and I suppose ultimately the battle, like, there's maybe not necessarily much to say about this one encounter. So it's like, maybe the battle itself can't, like, be its own movie, but yeah, a short film would be fine. I have to look that up later, see if we can find it.
I feel like if it is a movie, it has to be a drama with, like...
Oh, yeah.
It either has to be a sad drama of, like, the German side of it being, like, defeated, and, like, you have one character who you get super invested with who, like, barely survives. Mm-hmm. Or... it's got to be a very sad love story on the Russian side where, you know, like, you see his life beforehand and then he goes off to war and then he dies in this epic way.
Yeah, I think the way you go, you kind of have to show it from the Russian side. You have to show it as, like, a brilliant, like, underdog story facing adversity. And it's kind of like...
Yeah.
It's very similar to the movie 300 where it's like you have this... incredibly outnumbered force standing against this insanely powerful, like, attacking force, and it's like they all know that ultimately they're probably gonna die, but they're fighting anyway.
Yeah.
And the Russians did that. That's pretty badass.
Yeah, I did not expect them to win. I also did not expect the war to end up the way it did. The battle, I should say.
Yeah, I will say, though, quick note on the love story aspect. If you do go that route, two soldiers, one German, one Russian, and they're on opposing sides, but now they have to fight each other. Yeah.
That could actually work, because then, like, you see both and you don't know who to root for.
Yeah. And, like, the one dude on the German side is the guy who, like, has to actually deploy the gas, but he knows that his love is inside that fortress, but he's like... You know, am I in this relationship first, or am I a German soldier first?
Yeah.
And since, like, you know, gay couples are definitely not, like, accepted back in that time, they're like, it's not like I can tell anybody about this. He's like, I gotta send the gas in.
Yeah.
Well, not to mention they're at war, so they probably weren't gonna have much of a future in the first place.
That's true, actually. Very sad. But that is our story. It's a little shorter today, but that's all right.
It's a good story. I really am gonna have to look up that movie now because I want to see it. I wonder if it's got to be on YouTube somewhere. I think.
Oh, probably.
But yeah, a little shorter. I mean, on the plus side, it'll be easier for you to edit. There's way less to go through because we've definitely had some that are like 3 hours, and it's like, okay, I mean, there's not all that much content.
I can cut it down. I got it covered.
Well, and we tend to be pretty good about, like, this is just us bullshitting. Like, you don't have to keep this as, like, audio for the episode.
Yeah.
Patreon exclusive.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. So how do we feel about the pairings today?
Initial response, I was going to give them both a 10. And, like, just... As I was going through my Red Velvet cupcakes, they got less pleasing to me. And I'm not sure why. I mean, I just bought them from a grocery store. I got them from the bakery. They're very tasty, but I'm going to give them a 6 overall, the Red Velvet cupcakes. They're Red Velvet.
Okay.
But I feel like, they are soft, though. There 7. I give the cupcakes a 7.
There you go.
And the first sip of the White Russian was absolutely a 10. I used this coffee liqueur that I've never heard of before with just generic vodka, but I used real heavy whipping cream and real Wisconsin whole milk, and I kind of mixed them to make sort of a half and half. It was more like a third and two-thirds, because I'm like, there's going to be enough calories in here. I don't need to go overboard. But the first couple sips were excellent. But I left my cup sitting there because I was, like, taking pictures and, like, getting stuff ready. The ice melted and it started watering it down. And I'm like, oh, Yeah, it ended up being a little water. So I'm gonna give it a nine. I'm gonna give it a nine. It's okay. Very good, almost perfect. The first couple sips were perfect, but I let it sit too long and the water got to it.
I understand that. I think I would give my White Russian a 10, just because I love a good White Russian. I just do.
They're so good.
They're near and dear to my heart. I like them.
They're easy to make, too, and
they are.
Like, you can buy Bailey's for, like, $25, $30, and it's like, I can make something at home that's going to be pretty much as good.
Yeah.
And they're kind of like a cup of coffee. You can put in, like, other flavors of stuff, and it still tastes good. Oh.
I like to do it with half and half vodka and then some Kahlua.
Yeah, that's... I was going cheap today because I'm like, I should get Kahlua. The one that I ended up getting.
I was like, I had Kahlua at home and it was like, I got everything. So.
Well, there you go. Nice.
I don't have to buy anything.
Perfect. Well, and I saw a Kahlua that's, I've never seen a different flavored one, but there was one that was salted caramel. And I'm like,
oh my God. Salted caramel. Wait, Russian? Would you just call that like a salted Russian?
Ooh, that's a Russian czar?
Maybe.
Russian czarted caramel.
I feel like we need to poll social media about this name.
Oh yeah, if anybody's got an idea, yeah. If you have an idea of what you think that drink should be called, it's a very small twist, but it could make for fun wordplay. So
yeah, go onto our Instagram and comment on the episode or the image of the drink and let us know, because I want to know.
I'm going to go with Russian czarted caramel.
Doesn't exactly roll off
the tongue, but it's fun. Russian czar, salted caramel, Russian czarted caramel.
I'm going to go with a salty Russian.
Salty Russian's good. Definitely easier to say.
Yeah. And the cupcake, I would give it... I'd say probably about a 6 just because it was the store-bought one, nothing fancy. I didn't have a chance to run over to my favorite cupcake place.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's kind of what I did. I just stopped at the grocery store on the way back from my route. So it's like I should have gotten like a more fancy thing. Well, and we did just get a crumble just opened up. So like I could have gotten... I don't know if they do cupcakes, but cookies for sure. I guess.
I don't know if they have any in a crumble. I don't think they have any red velvet this week, if I remember correctly. I looked at it the other day.
Okay. Well, but I'll have to check it out in the future.
Yes, crumble is. I like crumble. Not everyone likes it, or people are like, I like it, but. I'm like, okay, well, yes, of course it's not going to be as good as, like, a homemade cookie. Like, what do you expect?
Right, but at the same time, it's like, when are you making these types of cookies? It's like, nobody, like, okay, yeah, you've got your basic, like, chocolate chip cookie. Maybe you do something a little special and you throw some, like, caramel pieces in it. But it's like, the stuff you get at Crumble, it's not going to be.
I got their cookies.
Oh, okay.
They got semi-sweet chocolate chunk, banana pudding, like, physical banana pudding.
Wow. Oh, it's actually, okay.
Whatever Olivia Rodrigo's guts cookie is.
All right. Interesting.
Okay. Chocolate covered strawberry, waffle, and then lemon glaze.
Oh, yeah. No red velvet.
No red velvet.
I must be thinking of something else then, because I know Lily would. No, I'm definitely thinking of a cupcake shop. And Crumble is cookies.
Okay, I figured out what the guts cookie is because I'm really confused by it. It is two chilled purple vanilla cookies sandwiched around a delicious layer of triple berry jam and light vanilla buttercream and then rolled with sprinkles on the outside with a star cut out in the center for jam.
With a star cut out in the center for jam. So it's diabetes in a single cookie.
Yeah.
All right, fair enough. Good God. That is a once a year on my birthday kind of cookie.
I say I like crumble cookies, but I'm definitely not buying them a ton, just because I'm like it's a lot.
It's a lot. They're very rich. It's kind of like if anybody else is on the same page as me, like I basically have one, maybe two, but usually a single Cadbury cream egg once a year at Easter, because they're just so dense, and it's just like, yeah, you take like half a bite, and I can already feel my teeth just like aching because it's so much sugar. And I'm like, that's enough Cadbury cream egg for a year. Hooray.
I'll see. Hooray. I had my single one. Yay. Yeah. The end.
Yeah. And I mean, they're delicious, but yeah, it's like, I can only take so much of it.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
Yeah. So listeners, let us know what you think of today's pairings. We'd love to hear from you about your thoughts. Yeah. Give us your ratings.
Let us know your ratings. You can check us out on the Instagrams and let us know. Let me know that you obviously like my name for the cookie better. Or the drink.
the cookie drink thing concoction.
Cookie drink. I forgot. I had like suddenly forgotten what the name. I was focused just on the name. I forgot what we were naming. But yeah, you know, it's, guys, don't spare Celine's feelings. Like, just let her know that my name for the drink is better, and and that's okay. But let us know. You can check us out at or you can email us at. I've done this part so many times. I feel like I should be able to do it from memory, and then I bought everything. I already mentioned
every
Instagram.
Time. I surprised myself.
And for anyone who's curious, I'm looking at a list. Like, I have these things from an email that you sent me when we first started doing this. So all I have to do is read it. All I have to do is read it. But I fucked up my own presentation in my brain. Here we go. If you have any suggestions for us, feel free to email us at peculiarpairingspod@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter at peculiarpairpod. You can check us out on Instagram at Peculiar Pairings Pod. That's where we mostly are. That's where we do most of the
things. That's true. That is where we are for the most part.
If you want to give us your own ratings and whatnot, check us out on Instagram. And you can also find us on Patreon. It's a lot of stuff.
Yeah. We are just about everywhere.
Yeah. And I saw that you put up a thing on the YouTube, so that's cool. A little clip on there to wet people's pistols.
Oh, yeah.
And
I forgot I did that.
It was very nice. It was very cute. Do you happen to have anything coming up for 50 most?
I don't at the moment, just since, honestly, it's probably going to wait till after the wedding, just because things have been crazy and my brain cannot handle it, which I wish I could, but mental health does need to come first.
Absolutely. Well, and I was going to say, we'll have to discuss like scheduling and whatnot for like closer to the wedding time. And for anyone who's listening and curious, I don't know how much we've talked about it, but that's in early November. So the closer it gets to that, and especially like during that time of November, probably going to be taking a bit of a break, which makes perfect sense.
Yep. You know, because a wedding is a pretty big deal, if I say so myself. Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's definitely one of those things that's worth taking some time off to enjoy and stress over a little bit, because that's part of planning a wedding, unfortunately.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, but do we know what we're going to be talking about next week?
Yes, I am realizing as I've written stuff down that after the Tower of London, I have definitely fallen into this very fun, very English UK section.
Okay.
In which our next episode is a theory about how Queen Elizabeth was really a man.
Oh.
Elizabeth the First, I should say. Okay.
Was not expecting that sentence to end that way, but I don't know what I was expecting you to say, but I was not expecting you to say that it was a theory that she was a man. I was thinking maybe like that she was an alien or
a lizard person, obviously, lives under DIA. I mean, what else is there?
Mm-hmm. Fucking lizard people. They run the world. They rule the world. They own the world. And eventually, we're all going to be lizard people.
Eventually. You know, it's going to happen at some point.
It's going to happen. Yeah, just accept it. Yeah, become a lizard person or be ruled by them. There's only two options.
Yeah. You're nothing else. Just the two.
Well, thanks for being with us, everybody. Hope you enjoyed the treats. Let us know what you think on Instagram, and we will see you next time.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Welcome to Primetime Crime Podcast. I am your host, Kylie, and in this podcast, we are going to deep dive into some lesser-known unsolved true crime cases, from missing persons to unsolved homicides. This is the place where we are going to unpack it all, research it all, talk about it all, and try to bring justice to these families after all of these years. We are going to take it one story at a time, one case at a time, and hopefully justice will be ours.
If you like paranormal, true crime, and some cryptids, or just anything weird, check out Ouch, Was That a Ghost? Brought to you by your host, Liz. You can find Ouch, Was That a Ghost? On Spotify, Apple, or any audio platform. New episodes drop every Thursday.